From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, Attorney General William Barr has tapped an investigator to investigate the investigators. It was announced yesterday evening that Barr has assigned the top federal prosecutor in Connecticut, John Durham, to examine the origins of the Russia investigation. Now, what signal does this send, and who should be concerned? Jeff Mordock, Justice Department reporter for The Washington Times, is here with the details in just a moment. And The Washington Post helped Vice President Mike Pence prove his point that he made when he told Liberty University graduates on Saturday that they need to be prepared to be marginalized for their biblical convictions in America. I'll talk more about that a little later. And the Equality Act is still scheduled for floor action on Friday morning. But as you heard here on Washington Watch yesterday, there is growing opposition not just from the political right, but also from the political left. One area that is contributing to the growing consensus of opposition is how the Equality Act will destroy girls and women's sports. Florida Congressman Greg Stube is here to explain a little bit later on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. All right, just a little bit of time left if you'd like to join us July 7th through the 14th for a cruise to Alaska. My wife will be joining me and several of the FRC team, including General Jerry Boykin, former Ambassador Ken Blackwell, as well as former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. You'll have an opportunity to see just the beauty is beyond description. Just see the majesty of God's creation. But then you'll get a behind-the-scenes look at what's happening in Washington with some of our experts. To find out more how you can be a part of that, join us. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, this morning as President Trump was leaving for Louisiana, he was asked if he had told Attorney General William Barr to launch an investigation into the Russia investigation. Here's what he had to say, clip five.
No, I didn't ask him to do that. I didn't know it, but I think it's a great thing that he did it. I saw it last night, and they want to look at how that whole hoax got started. It was a hoax.
It was announced late yesterday that Barr had tapped U.S. Attorney John Durham in Connecticut to examine the origins of the Russia investigation. Joining me now with more on this breaking story is Jeff Mordock. He is the Justice Department reporter for The Washington Times. Jeff, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's great to be here.
Explain what this means. Now that there's other investigations that have been going on by the Inspector General, the Utah Attorney General U.S. Attorney in Utah had been tapped for a previous investigation. What will be the scope of this one?
Well, this one, we haven't heard much from Bill Barr or John Durham exactly what they're going to be looking into. We've gotten some vague things. We've gotten some vague ideas from talking to sources and people familiar with the matter. One of the clearest thing that he's going to be looking into is the origins of the Russia probe, how this got started and took on a life of its own within the Justice Department and the FBI. How much of an influence was the Christopher Steele dossier, for example? How that led to spying? What was the one of the things he's going to be looking into is all the intelligence collection activities. And I think that's really important because it shows that John Durham's going to go beyond, possibly go beyond the Justice Department and the FBI and look at all intelligence communities, that he's been looking into. I mean, we've heard that he's been in touch with Gina Haspel and Dan Coats and Christopher Wray as part of this probe. So it could be more expansive beyond the FBI and DOJ.
What do we know about the resources he'll have? Will he have a team of investigators like the special counsel had? Will he have a budget? What do we know?
We don't know. The Justice Department has not provided any guidance on that. Mr. Barr and Mr. Durham have been mum about that. We just are not sure right now how much of a team he's going to have. And as a matter of fact, there's been, as you mentioned, another U.S. attorney who was tapped to look into similar investigations, similar allegations about a year and a half ago, and to this point, we still don't know whether that U.S. Attorney John Huber from Utah was ever given a budget or what kind of team he had. So a lot of that stuff seems like that's going to be cloaked in secrecy, at least for the immediate time being.
Did this announcement catch people by surprise?
It did catch people by surprise, and you saw President Trump and his allies today, really praising Barr for taking the initiative here. But Barr signaled he was going to do this, both in House testimony last month and Senate testimony last month, that he was going to look into this, and he was in the process of assembling a team. So we knew he was working on something. What that looked like, we weren't entirely sure, but Mr. Barr definitely made it clear this was going to be something he was going to take very seriously.
So is there a possibility, Jeff, that this reaches back, when there was spying, not just on the camp, well, there was eavesdropping, or there were the FISA warrants that listened into or tracked campaign officials with Trump. Does it go beyond that to look at some of the things involving the Justice Department when Hillary Clinton was involved? I mean, that's what a lot of people are asking. When are they going to look into those details?
And that's one thing we don't know yet. We haven't seen any indication that the Clinton investigation is going to be part of this. And it's not entirely sure to what Durham is going to do if he finds anything, for that matter, too. That's another question that's up in the air. He's got the authority, because he's a U.S. attorney, he's got the authority to convene a grand jury. He's got the authority to issue subpoenas. He can, he's got some investigative powers here. But if he does find corruption, or he does find illegality, what he's going to do, that kind of remains a mystery, too, what he'll do about it.
So, Jeff Mordack, what do we know about this U.S. attorney in terms of his background, what John Durham has done, and what should we expect from him?
Well, one of the key things I think that people need to know about his background is that he's somebody who's had a lot of bipartisan support throughout his career. U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal and Chris Murphy recommended him for the U.S. attorney position to President Trump. And, one thing you can say, Richard Blumenthal is certainly not a conservative, and he's certainly not somebody who believes that there was illegal spying going on. So the fact that Durham is somebody that's earned Richard Blumenthal's support, I think, is key. But he's developed a reputation as a hard-charging prosecutor, and he's also got experience looking into these big government government investigations. I mean, he's been doing these large government investigations going back to 1999 when Janet Reno appointed him to look into law enforcement corruption in Boston. Eric Holder appointed him to look into the destruction of alleged torture videotapes by the CIA. Michael Mukasey, under the George Bush administration, also had him looking into a couple of matters related to CIA torture. So that's large government investigations that he's undertaken under administrations of both parties. So he's certainly somebody who can call bipartisan support, and he's certainly somebody who knows how to do a massive government investigation.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Jeff Mordack, my guest, a reporter with the Washington Times. He is the Justice Department reporter. I would think that there's some confidence on both sides of the aisle. You mentioned the Democratic side, Jeff, but earlier today, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Lindsey Graham, said that he was no longer going to hold hearings into the FISA warrants based or abuse of potential abuse of the FISA warrants based on the appointment of this new investigator.
Oh, yeah. It's been it's been an absolute chorus of praise for Bill Barr from the Republicans. And yes, Lindsey Graham did say he's going to back off on the FISA abuse, saying that now that we have a prosecutor looking into this, we can take his word because he's somebody outside of politics. And basically what Lindsey Graham was saying is, if his investigation, whatever his investigation uncovers, there's going to be people questioning it because it's run by politics. And now we have somebody outside of politics who has bipartisan support who's going to get to the bottom of this, that you know, you can't – people – it'll be harder to question his qualifications or his bias or whether or not he was partisan than it would be for somebody like Lindsey Graham or other members of the Senate Judiciary Committee.
So, Jeff, who needs to be concerned about this investigation?
Well, that's a good question. I think anybody – I think all the people that we know that have been involved in questionable activities regarding the Trump campaign are people he's going to take a look at. And, I mean, we all know their names, Jim Comey, Andy McCabe, Peter Stroke, Lisa Page. Those are the people that I think – because they're the ones who are making the decisions. I think those are the ones who could end up on the hot seat as the result of this investigation.
So this is kind of a political question, but, I mean, you're on Capitol Hill. You work the Justice Department, so you've got an eye and ear for this. But how do the Democrats in the House respond to this, you know, in the Judiciary Committee where they're doing their own probes and investigations? How does this affect them?
That's a really good question. I mean, I'm assuming that they're going to we haven't heard anything from the Democrats today at all about this. Not that this was bad, not that this was good. The impression that I got is they're just going to continue and pretend this doesn't happen. They're just going to continue with their probes. They're going to pretend this doesn't happen, and they're going to move forward with what they have planned. The only Democrat that I have seen come out was Ro Khanna, who said that called it a total distraction. But that's really she's really the only one that I have seen talk about the issue.
So I guess they're working on their talking points, and they'll get with us tomorrow. Final question for you, Jeff, and I want to thank you for joining us. But what are you going to be watching as this unfolds? Because I want to know what you're going to be watching, because that's what I'm going to be looking for.
What I'm going to be watching for is what happens. What I'm watching for is a couple things. One is how quickly Durham moves, because one of the things about Bill Barr is that he moves quickly on things. Look how quickly we've got the Durham announcement after him saying he was going to look at something. Look at how quickly he got the Mueller probe out. Look how quickly after he started the Mueller probe and wrapped up. He's going to be looking for to look for how quickly he's going to be moving. The other thing I think is fascinating that we haven't had a chance to get into is whether or not this ends up being a competing probe or what this reveals about what John Huber was doing. Remember, mm-hmm. Jeff Sessions last year kind of fulfilled Republicans' wishes for a second special counsel with the announcement of John Huber, and I have done multiple articles about how we have no evidence John Huber's done anything since his appointment. For example, one of his key charges is looking at the Carter Page FISA warrant. We know Carter Page has said to me multiple times he's never heard anything from John Huber. Bruce Orr, who is one of the people that is also key responsible here at the Justice Department, he hasn't heard anything from John Huber, and I think that's going to be something to watch as well.
So we got to find out where John is. Maybe we need an investigator. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us. We will be tracking this closely and hope to talk to you again.
Great. Thank you so much, Tony. Appreciate it.
All right. Jeff Mordock with The Washington Times. All right, when we come back, The Washington Post proved the vice president's point when he told Liberty students to be prepared to be marginalized for your faith. I'll talk about it next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
There is unprecedented religious persecution around the globe. In recent years, research has found increasing governmental and social hostility towards religious believers worldwide. For the last 10 years, Christians have been harassed in more countries, including the United States, than any other religious group. While the specific threats to religious freedom vary in type and intensity, one common source is the legal and cultural support for apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws, which often threaten the freedom to choose or change one's faith. In a new publication from Family Research Council, we list which nations around the world have these unjust laws on the books and spotlight people who have faced severe penalties simply for sharing or changing their faith. For more information on religious hostility due to apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws around the world, visit frc.org/ABA laws That's frc.org/ABA laws.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of Values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, yesterday I mentioned that Vice President Mike Pence spoke at my alma mater, Liberty University, on Saturday, and religious liberty was a major portion of his speech, just like the speech I made on Saturday at Truett McConnell, where I did the commencement. But here, I want to play this. I'm going to bring it all together here. But here's a clip, just a small portion of what the vice president said to the students, the graduates at Liberty. Play clip one, please.
The truth is, we live in a time when the freedom of religion is under assault. Yesterday, I was informed by the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom that today, Christians suffer more persecution around the world than any other religion. In fact, the United Kingdom released a report just last week that said persecution of Christians worldwide is near genocide levels. In the last few months, we've seen unspeakable attacks on people of faith, on Jewish synagogues in Pennsylvania and California, on mosques in New Zealand, Christian churches in Sri Lanka, and on three historically black churches in Louisiana. No one should ever fear for their safety in a place of worship, and these attacks on people of faith must stop.
Now, the vice president, he goes on to speak about more subtle attacks on faith. Play clip two.
We live in a time when it's become acceptable and even fashionable to ridicule and even discriminate against people of faith. You know, it wasn't all that long ago that the last administration brought the full weight of the federal government against the Little Sisters of the Poor, merely because that group of nuns refused to provide a health plan that violated their deeply held religious beliefs. And when the state of Georgia recently was debating legal protections for the unborn, a bevy of Hollywood liberals said they would boycott the entire state.
Now, almost on cue, the media was quick to attack the vice president's remarks. Now, in the Washington Post, John Fea responded with this headline, quote, "Dear Mike Pence, the real persecution of Christians isn't here in America." Of course, the piece itself couldn't have been more ironic, as Fea is trying to dismiss the idea that believers are being targeted here in the U.S., and yet he spends a whole column doing exactly that. Now, he lifts the part of the vice president's remarks where he warns graduates that they'll be ridiculed for their faith, and then he suggests that the vice president needs some perspective. He's making the point that people of faith are marginalized, belittled, and yes, no one says that the persecution that is taking place overseas is the same as the marginalization or the intolerance that's being shown here at home. Now, I want to play one more clip, and then I want to kind of wrap this all up with a bow. Here's kind of a final portion of the vice president's speech as he's giving the graduates the charge. Clip four, please.
My message to all of you in the class of 2019 derives of the moment that we're living in today. You know, throughout most of American history, it's been pretty easy to call yourself Christian. It didn't even occur to people that you might be shunned or ridiculed for defending the teachings of the Bible. But things are different now. Some of the loudest voices for tolerance today have little tolerance for traditional Christian beliefs. So as you go about your daily life, just be ready, because you're going to be asked not just to tolerate things that violate your faith, you're going to be asked to endorse them. You're going to be asked to bow down to the idols of the popular culture. So you need to prepare your minds for action, men and women. You need to show that we can love God and love our neighbor at the same time through words and deeds. And you need to be prepared to meet opposition.
I thought it was a great speech, but I think it was right on point. And as I said, the Washington Post, the media outlets attacking the vice president for raising these issues of the intolerance that we see here at home. But look, this is actually the same message that Jesus gave to his disciples as they were kind of graduating to go out on their own and begin to do ministry. In Mark chapter 13, where he says, "Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Therefore, be wise as serpents, as harmless as doves. Beware of men, for they will deliver you up to councils and scourge you in the synagogues. You will be brought before governors and kings for my sake as a testimony to them and to the Gentiles." I mean, he goes on and talks about that you'll be hated. So we know that that's the case. So we're not lamenting that fact. We're bringing recognition to it. But here's the point, why it is important. As we look at the historic level of persecution abroad, where people are being killed for their faith, and I was a part of that presentation to the vice president on Friday with the USERF Commission, what we see here at home is smoke. What we see there are the flames. If you ignore the smoke, the flames begin. And I think when you see the growing intolerance at the hands of government like we saw under the previous administration, yes, we have to speak out about it. We have to exercise our freedoms in order to preserve those freedoms. If we just say, oh, you know, it doesn't really matter, we're not going to say anything, we don't want to cause any trouble, I'm telling you what, the ability to live out your faith and to share your faith will be lost within a generation. And there are those that say, well, the church grows under persecution. Now, the church is persecuted when it's advancing. What we have to do is to be faithful, to live out our faith, even in the face of a culture that increasingly rejects that faith, so that others might come to know the faith. All right, don't go away. On the other side of the break, we'll be talking about the Equality Act. It is scheduled for a vote in the House Friday morning. Florida Congressman Greg Stube joins me next with a point of actually consensus among both the right and the left in opposition. Now, not on Capitol Hill, but activists outside of Congress. We'll talk about it next. Don't go away. More to come.
Grandpa Jerry, what are you doing?
What? What does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting on this bench enjoying my tea and reading the news.
You always tell me that I need to stand firm for faith, family, and freedom. Why aren't you standing?
Well, now with this new Stand Firm app, I can sit and stand at the same time. And if you got the Stand Firm app, you could learn something besides that garbage of peddling in public schools. You could listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, where Tony and leaders on the Hill and other culture influencers weigh in on current events. You can read FRC's latest publications and articles responding to what's going on in the news, like this.
Oh.
You can play trivia and earn points for free prizes. You can even access all of FRC's publications directly to sharpen your mind and give you the ability to discern the thoughts and intentions of the heart.
I can be a mind reader?
Kid, that's from the Bible, the richest piece of literature on God's green earth.
Can I see this stand-up? Wow, this would keep me informed. Visit frc.org/app to download FRC's Stand Firm app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, as I mentioned, the Equality Act will be up for a vote on the House floor Friday morning. Now, the Equality Act is a disaster. It's not about equality. It's about pushing a radical social experiment on the American people that would torpedo the religious rights of people of faith, would deep six girls and women's sports as we know it. It would drive a wedge between parent and child. There's nothing that is redeeming about this piece of legislation. It is, as we've mentioned many times, the top 10 bills that H.R. 1 through 10, top 10 priorities for the majority. This is number five. My next guest, Congressman Greg Stube, who represents the 17th District of the state of Florida, serves on the Judiciary Committee, where he introduced an amendment to H.R. 5, the so-called Equality Act. His amendment ensures that nothing in the bill could be construed to require biological females to compete against biological males in sports. But with his Democratic colleagues, he didn't get out of the starting gate. Greg, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. Are you making any, getting any traction with your colleagues on the other side of the aisle with this effort to try to bring, equality into sports?
No, certainly not in the committee. It'll be interesting to see. We're trying to figure out a way to possibly offer the amendment on the floor. And there might be a scenario in which, I know that we will do as Republicans a motion to recommit because we're in the minority. And I don't know if this will have some of that language in it or not, because I would like to force a vote on the floor and force every Democrat in Congress to vote on this issue, because it's not an issue that really, I mean, there is a lot of liberal women out there that agree with this amendment because they are strong feminists and don't want biological men competing with their daughter for a volleyball scholarship in college. So it would be interesting to see where the rest of the caucus is, but in Judiciary, they all voted against the amendment.
Could it be that, the advocates of this, they see this as a weak link, and if they capitulate on this one aspect, that the whole house of cards comes collapsing down on them?
Yeah, it would be kind of like some of the other issues they brought up. We as the minority have won two motions to recommit, so if we're able to come up with one that's successful, But the bottom line is you're forcing these members on these bills, and I don't think this is an issue. I mean, I don't know where a lot of Democrats are on an issue like this, but I would think that the majority of Americans would think it's fundamentally unfair and not equality at all to have biological men who today decide that they want to be a woman competing with biological women in women's collegiate or high school sports. I mean, it just doesn't make sense based on our own biology and our strengths, and it would really put women at a competitive disadvantage as it relates to athletics.
And there's no way, I mean, if under this, if someone says, you know, hey, I am going to be, I feel that I'm a female, they don't have to go through the surgery, they don't have to do it, they can simply say that, declare it, and they would be able to compete as a female.
All they have to do is identify as a woman. Nothing other than that. It's just you saying one day I'm identifying as a woman, and they cannot, the colleges or sports facilities or whatever would not be able to deny that biological male the ability to compete in women's sports.
This has reached the point of lunacy when you think about it. And I think that, you know, where sports has long been something that has brought people together, it's been a pastime. You know, you put politics and stuff aside and you focus on sports. It's a recreational aspect of our society, but it's a big part of it. And I think this is actually getting people's attention, saying, wait a minute, I think we've gone too far.
Yeah, and you're starting to get liberal lesbian professional athletes like Martina Navratilova coming out in support of my amendment against this bill because of these very issues. It will delegitimize women's athletic events and women's sports. If you're going to have biological men who today are going to identify as women able to compete against biological women and whatever it is, the weekend after we had the vote, no, it was the weekend before we had the vote, there was a professional weightlifting competition, a women's professional weightlifting competition, and a biological male, surprisingly enough, won all 9 levels of the event in this competition, and several of the people that were competing were female were basically saying this is patently unfair. There's no way that women are going to be able to compete with biological men in things like weightlifting and other things.
Well, the next thing you know, you're going to have, you know, 24-year-olds participating in sports with 8-year-olds. I mean, you know, if there's no boundaries here by nature that are clearly there. If you ignore them, I mean, there's no end to what could come from this.
No, that you're completely blurring the lines and confusing fact and reality. And by doing that, it suddenly nothing is accurate. I mean, they changed the definition of what a woman is in this bill and the Violence Against Women's Act because you couldn't define them as a woman, because if it was a biological male identifying as a woman, they should be able to, under their bill, be able to take advantage of it. So they're changing the definition of a female as to any person. And so we're just completely going in the opposite direction that I think we need to be going in.
But I thought conservatives were the ones that were against science and biology. I think it would be the other side.
Good point.
Congressman Stuebe, thanks so much for joining us today. Keep up the
All
fight.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, Congressman Greg Stuebe from Florida represents the 17th Congressional District. All right, when we come back, we're going to go to the phone lines. Your turn next on Washington Watch.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
paid for by Family Research Council.
The latest Trojan horse on Capitol Hill is called the Equality Act. The way the left is advertising this bill is misleading because it does not further equality at all. It would actually violate current protections in place that allow private institutions and people of faith to freely act in accordance to their deeply held beliefs. The Equality Act explicitly removes religious liberty protections that were originally put in place with bipartisan support. Its stated goal is equality, but its actual result is harm to vast members of communities, individuals, and Americans as a whole by undercutting our foundational freedom of religion. Is this really what equality looks like? A more fitting name for the Equality Act would be the Inequality Act. For more information on the mass threat of the Equality Act, visit frc.org/EqualityAct2019. That's frc.org/EqualityAct2019.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, broadcasting here from Washington, D.C. at the FRC headquarters. The website is tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at tperkins. The phone number, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. We've had a lot to cover lately and haven't gotten to the phone, so today we're going to the phones. And here's what I want to talk about. I've got some callers lined up. BG, I'm coming to you in just a moment. But I want to talk about this thing with sports and the Equality Act and the other aspects. I mean, we just heard from Congressman Stubbe on a few of the dangers of the Equality Act, one of them being its harmful effects on women's sports. And that seems to be getting people's attention. But I want to hear from you as well in terms of, is it sports? Is it the parental rights? Is it the religious freedom? You know, this is up for a vote. And when we're hearing that the president's going to be releasing a statement on this, and in fact, there was a group of evangelical leaders that we transmitted a letter yesterday in opposition to this up to both the Democratic and the Republican leadership. Well, here's a number before I go to the phones. And by the way, that number is 866-372-7234. If you want to get in on the conversation this afternoon, 866-FRC-RADIO. 866-372-7234. But here's a number you need to have handy, especially these days. It's the Capitol switchboard. It's 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. And again, this Friday, the House will vote on H.R. 5, and you need to contact your member of Congress. And again, if you don't know your member of Congress, and I understand, you know, they redraw the lines. It's easy to forget who they are. You don't have to know them. Just know your zip code. Call the switchboard, tell them where you live, and they will connect you with your member of Congress. It's easy. I tell you, an easier way to do it is to get the Stand Firm app. Download the Stand Firm app. Go to the App Store, get the Stand Firm app. We make it easy for you to contact your members of your member of Congress and your senators. That's the Stand Firm app. In fact, we send out alerts so you know exactly when you need to communicate and what. That's the Stand Firm app. All right, let's go to Texas where BG is on the line. BG, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, sir. I love your Washington Watch. Look forward to it every day.
Well, thank you.
This thing about these folks that want to change their sex and all and try to slip in. Whenever they have these contests, it's still where they have to have blood tests and urine tests, make sure that they're drug-free and all this kind of stuff. And while doing this, I think it's only fair to go ahead and take the one more step and check that blood to see if this giver of this blood is capable of reproducing offspring. And if they are, then that means they're female and they should not be able to participate with the females. They should stay where they belong.
Well, the problem is, BG, I mean, good points, but where this legislation takes people, where it takes the country, is that someone's declared reality trumps real reality. And so it's whatever people declare. Doesn't matter biologically what the blood test says. Doesn't matter if the testosterone levels are there. Because if they declare that they're a female, even though they're a male, this legislation would say, all right, it's their reality. They can declare what they want. It's a dangerous world because it doesn't stop on the field of sports. It goes way beyond that. BG, thanks so much for listening and for calling in today. Let's go to Carrie in Nebraska. Carrie, welcome to Washington Watch. Oh, did we just lost her. Well, we'll get her back. Let's go to Texas, where Charles is on the line. Charles, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. How are you doing today?
I'm well. And
well,
you, sir?
I got a track. I'm good. I have a 14-year-old who excelled in track, excelled in gymnastics. I just drove back to Kansas for a regional meet in Kansas. You know, and she participated in her sports, been doing it her whole life. And it's kind of, I don't understand where the Democrats are going with this. Why are they just, I mean, what is the end game? I mean, what is the end game? It's like you spend a lot of money on your kids and you had them participate in these sports, and all of a sudden you got common sense. This is a male competing against females. Of course, they're faster. Of course, they're stronger. And where is the end game? This common sense. I mean, how many bills, how many laws has the Democratic passed since they've been in charge of the House? 9, I think. And it makes no sense. And I talk to the Democrats. A lot of my friends are Democrats. I'm a black man. And I lost a lot of them since I support Trump. But the thing is, they don't understand. They listen to the media. And they don't get the whole picture. A lot of my friends don't even speak to me. I went to college with them, graduated college. My brother, he's against me. They don't speak to me because, you know, I support. I'm like, hey, this is common sense things you guys are going against. You look at California. You look at the the porn that got to happen in Cali, in the school systems. And, you know, it's like, hey, what you guys don't get? It's because they're blinded by the media. They're blinded by the mainstream media. And it's just, and I got a couple of them who I've seen. A couple of my friends, he was a coach of the Dallas Cowboys, and he started seeing the light. You know, we went around, we started talking to a couple of our friends, and he's like, I didn't know all this was going on. And now I see him on his Facebook post, he posted Trump supporting media and stuff like that. All right, Tony, thank you.
Hey, Charles, thanks so much. Charles, you bring up a really good point. And what's the end game? And I think that's a great place to start, because then you can walk it back and you say, all right, what's the end game here? What are they trying to accomplish? Because if we get distracted by some of these, if we just focus too intently on each of these different moves, we kind of miss the overall picture. So when you look at what the end game is, here's the end game. I'm going to give you the end game. What are they trying to accomplish? It's cultural confusion. It is the disassembling of Western civilization. That's the end game. They want to piece by piece, and this has been going on for a long time. So this is not just HR5. This goes back to the undermining of the family. You know, you can go back to 1969 with no-fault divorce. You go back prior to that. We're promoting, you know, sexual promiscuity. I mean, all of these elements, it's a breakdown of society. And this is, I mean, we're nearing, you know, kind of the final stages. Because when cultural confusion occurs, what has to happen? You have to have something that harnesses it, something that corrals it. And what would that something be, since you no longer have the family? And they've been systematically attacking the civil society, churches, and those institutions that represent moral structure, the Boy Scouts. What's left? Think about it. What's left? Big, oppressive, tyrannical government. That's what's left. So for those who see government as the only means to accomplish their goals and objectives, this is what it's about. It's about the cultural confusion that brings society as we know it to a halt. That's what it's about. Let's go to Carrie in Nebraska. Carrie, welcome to Washington Watch.
I just wanted to make a comment. I went to a women's-only motorcycle show this past weekend in Nebraska here, and there was 26 participants, and of those 26, three were obviously transgenders. You could tell they were not women, but dressed like females. And I just think it's an identity crisis. My husband and I are in a ministry that's with motorcycles, and it's really hard to know how to minister to, you know, because we're all about building relationships with people, yet we're really struggling on where that line is when there's so many that are just in this identity crisis.
Carrie, you're not alone in that, and I think it's a really good place to stop and ponder the question: what do we do? Because it's one thing to take, and I think we do have to take part of the solution is that we got to take a firm, no nonsense position that this is not right. I don't think we can affirm this crazy thinking, but at the same time, we want to have a loving response. And you're right. It is the result of a crisis of identity, but it's much deeper, and it's been long in formation from a standpoint of our cultural confusion in this country, the breakdown of the family, the loss of the role models of fathers in our homes, and so we're beyond the point where we wish a silver bullet could solve this, that we could put it to rest. But it's beyond that. And the best we can do is it's kind of a rescue mission. It's a search and rescue mission of trying to build those relationships, as you said. But you build those relationships on a solid foundation of truth. And so we have to be honest. We cannot overlook reality, deny reality, or circumvent the truth to build those relationships to rescue those who are caught in this torrent of cultural confusion and evil. So, Carrie, I commend you for asking that question, but encourage you to prayerfully consider how to do that in the way of standing firm on truth, but reaching out with love. That's where we've got to be. I mean, I was out this weekend and encountered an individual that was overcome with the effects of drugs, and your heart goes out to them, but you can't reason with them when they're in that state, and in many ways, as Isaiah talked about, they were drunk but not with wine. We've got a culture that is intoxicated, not necessarily in some cases with substances, but in other cases we're just culturally confused. Carrie, thanks so much for listening and for calling in. I'm going to try to work in a couple more calls here. Let's go to Barbara in Texas. Barbara, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, thank you. I'll try to be brief. This is obviously evil, and once we have called our congressperson and complain that they should not vote for this bill, then we need to I want to encourage Christians to remember Matthew 18, verse 19. where he says, "Again, I say unto you, if two of or more of you agree on earth as touching anything that they shall ask, it shall be done for them of my Father which is in heaven." So if we all pray against this evil, this is the Romans 1 culture, so we need to all agree to pray against it in the name of Jesus. And that's all. Thank you. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you, Barbara. And yes, we need to be praying for our country. We need to be praying for those in positions of authority, as we're instructed in Timothy. Pray for our kings. Pray for the rulers. Pray for those that make these laws. Pray that, you know, their eyes would be open to the truth, and whether or not they fully understand it and embrace it, but that their feet would be directed toward it nonetheless. All right, let's go. Going to get another call in here. Let's go to Ron in Arkansas. Ron, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, I tell you, I think there's a lot of things being missed here. I used to be a high school coach, and obviously girls and boys cannot compete on the same field. But if all they have to do is declare, and I've said this for a long time and never really had a voice to speak, if all they've got to do is declare, what's going to stop a high school boys football team from deciding, hey, today we're all girls, let's hit the girls' shower room while they're taking their shower? If that's all they got to do is declare, I think the schools are hogtied and won't be able to do anything about it. And then what are the girls' parents going to say then?
Well, and that's somewhat covered in some of these policies and in the Equality Act, that the parents can't say anything. And that's
exactly
a part of it. It's a safety issue. It's a privacy issue. You're right, Coach. There's so many things wrapped into this. It is extremely dangerous. But it also, if we step back dispassionately for just a moment, and I go back to the earlier question, what's the end game? We also ask the question, how do we get here? How do we get here? Well, you know, actually, Romans chapter 1 gives us a little indication. I know it's that obscure book in the Bible, according to a previous president. But how we got here is we rejected the truth. We were unthankful, ungrateful in our hearts. We suppressed the truth with a lie. And we got to this point. How do we get back? How do we get back onto the path? Well, number one, prayer is involved, but also a commitment to the truth. And that regardless of the ridicule, the marginalization, the hate that might come our way, we have to stand for the truth. Because standing on the truth, we have the foothold with which we can reach out and rescue those who need help. All right, folks, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.